Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How many languages do you have, Lars?
Not many, because I have the Scandinavian ones, like Swedish, Norwegian, Danish is basically the same.
Yeah.
And obviously English and a bit of French. It's like Roy Hodgson, who claims to speak all the Scandinavian languages, whereas what he does is speak one that's like a mashup of all three, with a bit of English thrown in. Like,
really?
Hodgson speaking Scandish is amazing.
Is it not as well respected as people assume?
He is well respected, but what I've said like before is that he was almost like a sort of, almost like a comedy character, because he was really funny. And he was a little bit sort of outlandish, and like he would do weird things. Like once after a game, he was a bit cross, and in the interview zone, he got cross with a reporter. He grabbed his textbook and just wrote, "Roy Hodgson has no comment for you," and gave it back to him. Like he did sort of stuff that you would think is more Mourinho-esque, you know, not the sort of avuncular, boring.
Apparently, we're in a brave new Mourinho era now. Yeah. One of the big stories that's come out of this international break is Gareth Bale and Real Madrid. Now, the timing of it is probably the most egregious thing from Real Madrid's point of view. I mean, he's been out of the team for a long while through injury. I think he hasn't played since the start of October.
Congratulations on being the only person in Britain to bring that up.
Right. Is that sarcasm or?
No, I'm not actually.
Well, I'll give you my terrible take and then you can follow up on it and tidy it up.
Okay.
So he hasn't played since the start of October. From their point of view, regardless of how shabbily he feels he's been treated, and Real Madrid would probably disagree with that anyway, it doesn't look great from a timing point of view for him to unfurl that flag, having managed to make it back for two key Wales games, play well in both, and people in Madrid probably think of him playing well for Real Madrid as a somewhat distant memory. So why don't you give us the Madrid take on it? That's kind of my take. Why don't you give them their take?
I think that's important to make that difference, because as I was saying, I think the feeling in the UK certainly is he can do what he wants because he's not been treated well at Real Madrid, and you know they've tried pretty much everything to get rid of him, certainly up till the closure of the transfer window. And you know, he has been brought back into the team, and he was never totally cut off from the team. We have to say that as well. The fact is, even when Zidane was open about trying to dump him, it's not like he made him go and train with the kids or anything like that. He was part of the first team squad. He played in pre-season, and he's played when he's been fit in this La Liga and Champions League season as well. But yeah, as you say, it is a question of timing. I think there is something to be said. And yeah, we are going to find some balance here on him just having a laugh. And there's no suggestion that he got the flag out. is there? You know, someone else got the flag out. It's a good flag that has done the round.
It's a great flag. No one's questioning the flag.
No.
But he's, the fact is he's played four games, I think, for Wales since he last played for Real Madrid on the 5th of October, I've just checked. And
yeah, he's missed six and now turned up big in two Wales games.
And that flag would probably be something you'd probably just about get away with if you were a first-team regular for Real Madrid and everything was going well and it's a bit of a joke, bit of a side-eye thing, and you get back to Madrid afterwards and go, oh, yeah, you know, sorry about that, just having a bit of a laugh, got a bit carried away, whatever. But the fact that his position there is so tenuous, it to me, Lars, I don't know about you, but it feels quite ill-advised, to say the least.
Yeah, it's tremendously ill-advised, and I'm rapidly getting to the point of having close to zero sympathy for Bale for his whole situation, because it's worth bearing in mind, I mean, he could have left the club this summer if he wanted to. There are so many clubs where he could go and play football where he would be appreciated and valued, and which is what the club wanted him to do. The main reason he hasn't gone anywhere is financial, right? Because there's a scarcity of clubs who are prepared to meet his wages. Hmm. And that is the massive stumbling block. But he doesn't, instead of going somewhere where he would be a big part of the club, and who knows, maybe a new set of physios to look at his body would stop him from getting hurt all the time as well.
It's all about yoga.
Brussels. A keen, keen yogi.
There's so
that's the word.
Yeah. There's so many opportunities. I heard you referred to on Talksport as a bendy man because of it, which was a worrying moment.
That can mean a horrendous amount of things.
Very worrying moment for everyone concerned. Yeah. No, there's so many places he could have gone, so many things he could have done, and the main reason he's stuck at a club where he's not wanted is financial, right? Because no one will match his salary, and he doesn't want to take a wage cut. And if you're going to do like a Winston Bogarde light,
yeah.
Don't expect people to have a huge amount of sympathy for you, right? When you also do this thing where, I mean, maybe it was coincidence they didn't turn up. But yeah, it's not a good look. And it's the whole sort of, yeah, Wales, Gulf, Madrid. You know what? Which of those three entities are paying you over 300 grand a week to be their employee? And it's not the Gulf. Yeah. It certainly is not Wales either, right?
Is it Real Madrid?
And this, you know, it is incredibly. And this sort of stuff, I think, matters a little bit. I think they're right to be hacked off with them now, even if you do mean, if you did mean it as a laugh. And front page of Mark Ahead, disrespectful, misguided, ungrateful, in that order. And,
right.
Yeah, you know, you don't often look at anything Marca publishes and says fair enough, but you know, I look at that and say fair enough.
And this is the say what you mean moment, isn't it? Because they've thought that about him for a really long time, and we're not talking about months; we're talking about years. Mm. The perception that he has cared more about Wales than he cares about Real Madrid, and you know, he actually said it, didn't he, last week in the build up to the games, and they're just coming out and saying, okay, well, if that's how you really feel, this is how we really feel. And the optics here are massively important. And, you know, for the same reason that, you know, England fans, a lot of England fans thought John Terry, for example, was, you know, a better captain than Steven Gerrard, or a better candidacy for the captaincy than Steven Gerrard, because, you know, he's a chest beater and a shouter on the pitch, where obviously Gerrard's a much better captain for England because he's more intelligent and more articulate, leads by example, all that sort of stuff. But in this situation, no one's asking him to be a chess beater, but look like you give a shit. I think that's really, really important.
But to casual watchers of Real Madrid and Spanish football and indeed the Champions League, we can have all this chat about what Marca think about him and what the hierarchy at the club think about him. And of course, that is important to an extent. But casual watchers will say, look at the amount of games he's played. Look at the things he's won. He has undoubtedly made a contribution to this team.
No one's saying he hasn't,
and he's been well rewarded.
So what do they? So what do they want?
Well,
not in terms of,
to sell him.
Yeah, fine. But to me, this flag thing feels like a symptom rather than the cause.
Absolutely.
The symptom doesn't come after the cause. It comes as a culmination of all these things. So if he's now doing this, which I think I would criticize him for, as I said, it's ill advised, but it has to be seen in the context of a number of years of what he would see as disrespect on his point of view, because he has contributed in big games on big occasions and delivered trophies, or played his part in delivering trophies for the biggest club in the world. So I do have an element of sympathy with Gareth Bale, or indeed any player who wants to say, well, do you know what? I don't actually want to be the person you demand me to be. What I will do is play football for you, and that's it.
All I would say, if you're looking at it from a Madrid perspective, since, as you would say, Luke, you had El Bolígrafo sobre la mesa.
Yeah.
What has he won since then? I think what has he been a huge part of since then? Since he got that contract extension, they feel that they've had very little bang for their buck. And I guess Fair. You could say, well, no one made them give him the contract. But I think they've been feeling that they've been getting a decreasing amount since that contract has been signed. And that's why it's such an enormous millstone. That's why they're struggling to shift him.
Yeah, I do think you're right. Perhaps it is unreasonable to demand that he should be sort of culturally integrated with the whole Madrileño cause. But he could make more of an effort, I think. And the fact that he seems to be like making less and less of an effort is, I think, is understandable that's grating. And again, the sort of, it's also very ill-advised when this is the context, when this is the backdrop, to go away on international duty and say, yeah, I like it much better here. It's so much more fun to play for Wales. That's probably not what he meant. Like, he meant that he can relax more. He pointed out the thing about the language and that he's playing with players he's known for a long time, all this sort of stuff. But it's just, he has to understand how that looks, how that'll be received. He comes across as a guy who doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if this has changed anything, though, really. I mean, regardless of whether he played the last six games for Real Madrid and was good, or sat there being injured and then sprang into action for Wales, if they can, and it's very difficult to do a transfer of this sort of magnitude in January, they will want to sell him in January. Mm. And if it's possible, he would want to go in January as well. So has it really changed much?
But it comes back to, but this is the thing that grates me. I'm sorry to go on about it, but you know what? If he wants to leave, he is free to leave. The only thing that is stopping him from leaving Real Madrid is the fact that he doesn't want to give up the money he's owed. And he's completely entitled, like you say, no one forced him to give him that contract. Mm. He's at a stage of his career where it's completely understandable that he's thinking with his wallet, given that he's past 30 and he has an injury record and you don't know how long he's going to go on for. But I don't. That's why I don't have any sympathy with it. Like, if you want to leave, just leave.
Do you think he was injured for all those games?
I think accusing people of not being injured when they say they're injured is a slightly dodgy ground to be on. Like, I've not got any reason to.
But are you saying, essentially, take a Tottenham appropriate pay cut?
Wait, have to.
Say that.
Hang on a minute. It's a brave new era at Spurs now. If you could pay the manager 15 million a year, you could pay Bale 12 million a year.
Oh, God, no, you wouldn't.
Mieux aller les percuter, pourquoi pas les déborder? Oh là, c'est un carton incontestable de Di Biagio. Il est jaune.
Another big story in Spain is the fact that Luis Enrique has returned as manager of the Spanish national side, replacing Robert Moreno, who I think probably did hopefully I'm not being unfair to Robert when I say this, a glorified caretaker position after Luis Enrique stepped down in obviously very tragic circumstances. And we wish him all the best and we welcome him back into the top level of football because he's an exciting coach and because he's been through an awful lot. I don't know if Moreno will fit into the setup under Enrique. Perhaps you guys can tell me this. But it's great to see him back, isn't it?
It is great to see him back and it should be a cause for celebration. Unfortunately, the RFAF have made, as Lars and I were talking about it off mic, and Lars was saying, how is it that they've basically turned a situation where it should be the best for everyone into a very, very difficult one.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what they've done.
Because Moreno, for those who aren't aware, is Enrique's longtime assistant, right?
That's right.
Working under him, he's been working under him for something like 9 years in three different clubs, if I'm not mistaken. So, and everyone were very upfront about when Enrique had to step away, that when he felt ready to come back, the job would be there for him. Moreno himself has been entirely clear that that's not a problem for him. So it would seem to be a situation. I mean, there's enough difficult situations in football where clashes of egos and people's agendas don't align and whatever, that people fall out and you say, all right, fair enough. But this is a situation when everyone's interests are aligned perfectly.
It's the way that FA have dealt with it.
Exactly, which and is remarkable. You should well,
give us a quick praise of how the events have transpired
then. Basically, it looked like Luis Enrique wouldn't come back and they sort of permanently given him the job. And then he finds out that Enrique's coming back without them having told him.
Right.
Basically.
I mean, that is almost an English FA style mess up.
He got pretty upset to the extent that when they beat Romania 5-0 in the last qualification game, he didn't go and give the press conference afterwards. Now, he's smoothed it over to an extent. He's given a statement himself saying it's been a terrific moment for him looking after the Spain team, and he wishes everyone all the best, and he's looking forward to his next project. And hopefully, from his perspective, that's going to give him a bit of renown when he goes out and looks for something else. He's not staying. That's the important thing to underline. He's not going back to what he was. And, you know, I think it's always a bit awkward when you look at previous actions and then revise your opinion on them, given what's happening now. But I think we kind of have to do that with Luis Rubiales, the head of the RFEF, because if you go back to the whole Lopetegui thing...
Are you saying that they've had a bad year?
And a half, is what I'm saying. Because, you know, he got the benefit of the doubt because over sacking Lopetegui, which the players never wanted him to do, which pretty much torpedoed Spain's World Cup, because people thought, okay, it's on Lopetegui, it's on Real Madrid. And I think it's very notable that at the time, all the Madrid papers, who are normally El Real's lapdogs, were like, well, this is completely out of order. There was only one newspaper that really stuck with Real Madrid over that. And guess who it is?
Fox News?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And, I think you have to go back and re-examine that and think, actually, has Rubiales ever been on top of situations? Because, I mean, for something like that to happen a couple of weeks...
In his whole life.
It's like, get the coffees in. It's like, oh no!
But for something like that...
Get the coffees. Oh, I've accidentally given an extension to Jose Mourinho.
Yeah. But for something like that to happen, like after you've been in the job a couple of months...
Is he like a Mr. Bean type character or more of a Basil Fawlty type character?
Perhaps an amalgam of the two.
Okay.
We're still finding out.
Okay, right.
As with great footballers.
Is there any talk of him perhaps being relieved of his duties? Is there a mechanism for that to happen?
Well, people are pissed off with him.
To use a Daniel Levy phrase?
There's no doubt. Yeah. there's no doubt about that.
Okay.
But as Lars said, it should have been incredibly straightforward, and it's not been. It's not been. Though, whether this makes Spain amongst one of the favourites for Euro 2020, I'm still not convinced.
That's still
a work in progress.
Because we talked about this, the three of us did a radio show last week, and I asked you guys very pointedly whether you thought Spain were contenders for the Euros next season, serious contenders, and we didn't have them as a group. We didn't even have them in our top four, I don't think.
No.
But how does the reappointment of Luis Enrique, Lars, change that, if at all?
It changes it a little bit, I think, because, I mean, having watched them play against Norway and against Sweden under Moreno, it really just struck me, they drew both games, and it really just struck me that was just proper sort of Spain when they're bad. Like, there was so much sideways passing to no great effect. Like, I mean, they weren't incisive.
You are picking their two worst matches.
I know, but they're quite recent. And,
for sure.
And I saw them, and it did give me the sense that they've certainly not improved here. And having Enrique back...
For those who didn't see those two games, Lars, would that be a kind of a mirroring of how they performed against Russia in the World Cup?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities.
Okay.
It wasn't quite that.
And that's what Luis Enrique is meant to be the antidote to.
Yeah. Enrique is a guy who both... It knows the sort of ball possession style, but he's a guy who has a bit of an edge to him, right? Who can add a little bit of pragmatism to it, hopefully.
There's the odd shortcut, isn't there?
Yeah. The Roma fans had a slightly different experience when he was there, of course. That was,
although they still love him.
Yeah, but it wasn't very good. Anyway.
So we'll see see what transpires and how they change. I mean, the thing is, I don't know if it's the same for Spain, but I know England don't have an awful lot of games between now and the Euros. I mean, presumably
exactly.
The club calendar is so stacked that it might not be much time for Luis Enrique to do anything meaningful. But, I mean, I guess everyone involved is hoping he just slots back in, apart from poor old Robert, who just wants to forget about the whole thing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where he does turn up next, and if people do have that perception, as you do, that he was simply a glorified caretaker rather than someone who did a job with Spain over the last couple of
years. Well, I don't want to be unfair to him, but because the circumstances were, of course, severe and very tragic, and it's easy for me to be blithe about it. Of course, it was a very difficult situation. I wish him well. If he's been treated the way that you said he's been treated, and I didn't know that, then that's bad, and I hope he gets a recompense for that in the form of another job. Before we move out of Spain... the latest twist in the Diego Costa at Atletico Madrid for the second time saga appears to have been a literal twist to his cervical disc, which means he's going to be out probably for the rest of the season. Can there really be any doubt at all now that the re-signing of Diego Costa has been anything less or anything more than a complete disaster?
No, there's not much doubt of that at all. And bearing in mind, they spent a lot of money bringing him back in, you know? And Atleti are not a club who can spend a lot of money casually, and there was so much...
Well, not in January, anyway.
So much energy went into it, and remember he had this whole thing that he was really overweight, and he spent a lot of time in Fernando Torres' boxing gym to get himself right, and this sort of thing. And it's just, it hasn't really worked out. Two goals in his first half season back, then two goals last season, then two goals this season. I mean... For the money he's on, for the money they're paying him, I mean, having scored two goals more in La Liga than my dog is sort of not it's not what they were hoping for.
It's diminishing returns, and I think Indeed. It has been for some time.
Can I just ask, how does it work out that Diego Costa goes to Fernando Torres' boxing gym rather than Fernando Torres goes to Diego Costa's boxing gym?
Yeah, it doesn't seem right, does it? There's a brilliant picture in Ass, I think today or yesterday, reporting this news, and it's a picture of Diego... next to two red flashing lights, which of course are those sensors they use to check to monitor their speed and their shuttle runs and stuff. Yeah. But because it's Diego Costa, it simply looks like he's being arrested.
Can I just... Yes, Andy, but who do you think is better suited to train in a boxing gym and who do you think is better suited to owning one, like getting the lease sorted and getting the equipment in? I think I would trust Torres to sort of do that job more so than...
Diego Costa would end up punching the freeholder.
Exactly.
Yeah, Fernando Torres would probably at least get someone to pay the bills.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
It does leave them in a bit of a bind, doesn't it? Because in January, Enrique Cerezo, the president, has said, well, we haven't really got any money to do anything without selling someone first. Now, the first one, who would be the first one you sell?
Yeah.
Diego Costa,
who
Diego Simeone a couple of months ago said, no, we're not going to sell him to the Chinese Super League, which again looks a terrible decision in retrospect because they'd have so much more disposable cash. As Lars was saying, Atletico has spent a lot of money in the last couple of years and that team is still a work in progress. If it was a bit further along the line, maybe they would have an opportunity to take advantage of the fact that Real Madrid and Barcelona aren't really quite there and that they're in a bit of a state of flux, that it will be a lower points total to win this season's league. I think it's projected to be about 79, 80, something like that, rather than the normal 96, 97. But they're just drawing too many games. I think they've scored, what, something like 16 goals in 14 games so far or something like that. Anyways, very little over a goal a game. The burden on Alvaro Morata, especially until Joao Felix comes back from injury and,
15
and gets his groove on, 15 and 13.
Yeah, they've got the best defence, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
Fewer goals than Levante so far.
Yeah.
Not ideal.
Yeah, and especially after the money they've spent on forward players. It's almost an intolerable burden on Alvaro Morata, especially until Joao Felix comes back. And, you know,
people remember Alvaro Morata because he was the man at Chelsea who looked like, when he was in London, was living under several unbearable burdens, didn't he?
I mean, he's dealt with it really so well because you look at a player like him and a player whose mentality in London was totally questioned.
And he's hit the ground running again.
Yeah, it was going to be sink or swim when he arrived and worked under Diego Simeone, and it's been swim emphatically.
But he's spoken quite candidly about this, Morata. He gave a good interview to Sid Lowe, I think it was, talking about how fans don't recognise and appreciate that when a player is going through a bad run, it is almost always something in their life outside of football that
of
is
course,
part
yeah.
of the problem, and it's something that we're not privy to very often. It's something that should be part of the equation more, and he just didn't like being here.
I feel very passionate about that. I think about the thing we try to do with Ramble Meets on the channel is to try and humanise players as much as we can because people don't think of them as human beings. Alvaro Morata is a player. He's such a shame in Chelsea because he's a player who as a forward, can be almost every type of forward.
Yes,
he's got everything in his locker. You know, he makes players around him better, which is a great sign. So it's a shame, but I'm pleased he's doing well. But they have to be sensible about the pressure that's on him, particularly if now they're losing a player. We talked about diminishing returns, but they are losing a frontline striker, a high-earning striker, a big personality at the club.
Yeah, and the other thing we have
a long time.
The other thing we have to say about Diego Costa, when we perhaps say that he's been an unmitigated disaster since he's returned, in the first 6 months, forget the goals and all that stuff. He made Griezmann flourish basically beating up the defenders for him. And that allowed Griezmann to come on and, you know, lead them to that Europa League win.
And now he's gone as well.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
All right, we're going to cover Jose Mourinho to Spurs in the spiciest meatball of the season so far. tomorrow on the preview show, of course. But one angle we can explore here under our remit on European football is the backroom staff he's hired. Now, he's brought in João Sacramento and Nuno Santos from Lille, and there's talk that he might bring in Luis Campos as well, although that will be, I suppose, the
sporting
club.
Director, Luis Campos.
Yeah, the club doing that as a sport in the sporting director role. How significant is that to the appointment, and what do we expect from those additions?
I think it is significant because obviously there's certainly in a section of the Spurs community, a deal of trepidation about the arrival of
very polite way of putting it.
Jose Mourinho. It's the only way to put it.
Imagine a Vox pop on Sky Sports News. No, I just have an element of trepidation about my feelings
while stood in front of the stadium. Yeah,
rather than saying, I think he's a fucking wanker.
But I think the fact that there is a different backroom staff is significant and helpful to Mourinho.
If we're not, because Rui Faria had enough of his shit and fucked off to Saudi Arabia.
Well, yeah, he's otherwise indisposed, steering his own ship at the moment.
Today, sorry, I'll stop that now.
So sweary.
Sorry, carry on.
I thought that meant we can also be sweary.
No, you doesn't. Not
which,
you.
Which
Lars.
Is appropriate when we move into the Mourinho segment.
I know what the Scandinavians like when they get swearing.
Satan.
Don't know what that means. Carry on.
Just say you're offended.
I'm offended, Lars.
I think it is interesting, and it's something that's not entirely unexpected as well, because while he's been out of work over the last 11 months, especially in the back end of that spell, Mourinho spent a lot of time in Lille, and not just because he's mates with Luis Campos, but because, and a lot of people had second-guessed it as, you know, maybe he's coming into French football. People had linked him with the Paris Saint-Germain job. People had linked him with the Lyon job, even, although I think that was beyond their financial means. But because he's interested in the way they do things at Lille. Now, Luis Campos could end up being very helpful to them. I think he's very Daniel Levy. You look at the profits he's made from buying, developing and selling players at Monaco and Lille.
Give us an example of some of the players.
It's very impressive. Well, I think you can go all the way back at Monaco and look at players like Bakayoko, Bernardo Silva, Kylian Mbappe, although of course he was club produced. And then you look at Lille, the obvious one is Nicolas Pepe, obviously, who they... what. I think they got 8 times the money they spent for him, something around that, maybe a little bit less, which is incredibly impressive. And so that will totally appeal to Daniel Levy. But I think the thing about João Sacramento is interesting because he's a younger man and he's someone who was brought in to help out Marcelo Bielsa when he came to Lille. Now, Bielsa, by a few accounts...
A bit of a hospital pass, isn't it?
Yeah. Well at Lille, definitely. Yeah. Bielsa, according to a few accounts, thought that he overstepped the mark a little bit. I think there may have been an element if he thought he was too close to Luis Campos, and Bielsa didn't like that. But apparently he questioned a couple of the things he was doing in training. And so Bielsa... sort of put him to the side and put him in a less influential
position. Put him in the VHS video room.
Yeah, pretty.
So stay in there for a week.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun to me. Like fun to Jonathan Wilson.
Pass some bread and water under the door.
Yeah. But when Bielsa was relieved of his duties, Sacramento stood in and did an okay job in what was a chaotic situation. A good enough job, in fact, that Christophe Galtier, when he came in as coach, and we've said it on here before, but it's really difficult to put into words, and I realise that is our job, essentially, to express the 360 difference between Bielsa and Christophe Galtier. Mm. They're from two absolutely different planets. So for Sacramento to help Galtier get to the point where he could turn Bielsa's squad into a squad that actually stayed up was pretty incredible. From there, of course, they've gone on, they've regenerated the team together. Sacramento gets to take a lot of training and do a lot of the tactics with Lille as well. And I don't think there's any doubt from anyone who's watched Jose Mourinho over the last few years that he could do with a bit of a tactical refresh.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
I think that's something that is going to be very, very helpful to him. Of course, Lille went on and qualified for the Champions League, finished second last season. So I actually think it's pretty exciting. And I feel excited that Mourinho is looking at things a little bit differently because, you know, we do expect with managers and big name managers that they're going to get the band back together whenever they go into a new job. So that he's thinking about it slightly differently. Nuno Santos, by the way, is a goalkeeping coach.
Right.
And he, like Jose Mourinho's dad, was a goalkeeper at Setúbal. So he's from the same place as Mourinho.
Nice. Lars, anything to add to that? You don't have to.
Well, the Spurs fans might feel a bit shortchanged that they're getting Mourinho, but they won't have like Rui Faria sort of roving around on the touchline shouting at everyone. It's just not the same.
I'm sure Sacramento might want to do a bit of that as well. Fill in. It's probably vital.
We'll see.
Yeah, we will. We'll find out.
He's no Phil Thompson.
Who is? Who is? All right, well, all this is happening, of course, because Mauricio Pochettino has flown the nest, has been relieved of his duties, in the words of Daniel Levy.
It's not quite voluntary flying of the nest,
no,
was it?
Apparently not.
More like falling out of the nest.
Yeah.
being pushed.
Well, which top football club cat is going to pick him up into their gaping maw? That's my next question. Did you even understand that question?
Are you the gaping maw?
Yeah, sometimes. Depends on what day of the week you get me. Where is Poch going to rock up next? I mean, he's not going to be short of... I mean, it's a testament to how well he's respected and how good a coach he is that he's not going to be short of offers. There's been talk of Bayern. There's been a reshuffle there.
Yeah.
Although you guys have said to me that you think it'll be Hansi Flick at Bayern to the end of the season, then probably Erik ten Hag. So does Poch gate crash that party or does he go somewhere else?
Very possibly. I mean, this is really the dream, isn't it, for all the clubs out there who are interested in him and have been interested in him. So Bayern, Real Madrid, Juventus, all of those. I mean,
tell you what, if I'm Edward Wood this morning, I am banging that phone.
Exactly, because you think
I'm all over it.
You think about it, like a week ago, you're faced with the prospect of dealing with Daniel Levy, which no one really wants. And now, one of the best managers in the world, let's be honest, is available for free. I mean, that's as good as it gets. And there is a strong sense, I think, the comparisons have been made with Jurgen Klopp and the end of his spell at Dortmund.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it went badly for Klopp at Dortmund for a lot longer at the end of his spell than it did for Pochettino.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, you could argue that it was all downhill from the 2013 Champions League final, and there's a lot bigger gap between that and when Klopp actually leaves than to from, you know, June in Madrid to now for Pochettino.
I think domestically it's a little bit longer than that, but I do take your point.
Absolutely. I think that's fair as well. But I think Pochettino, the longer he leaves it, the more power he's got.
100%.
You know, that's the same for any coach. That's the same. It's been that for Guardiola, Tuchel, and he's in that sort of bracket. So he can take his time and get exactly what he wants. He can see what happens to Sarri at Juventus. He can see what happens to Zidane at Real Madrid. But I think we have to say as well that the German media, very, very excited in the immediate aftermath of his sacking. There's even been suggestion that we will give it Hansi till the end of the season, just so Pochettino can learn German. Although it appears that having a German-speaking head coach is not the red flag it once was, partly due to Uli Hoeneß moving on. Although there's always the possibility of Thomas Tuchel being brought in, because Karl-Heinz Rummenigge wanted him all along. Uli Hoeneß is no longer president of Bayern Munich. And if Tuchel were to come to Bayern, would that leave a Poch-type hole at Paris Saint-Germain, who played for them for 2 years and already speaks brilliant French, of course?
Yeah, it's interesting how the Hoeneß dynamic, Hoeneß situation might change the dynamic there, because, of course, as you say, there was very much a sense that they didn't want a non-German speaker, and partially because of... And also the other thing they wanted is they didn't want someone to be brought in a big technical staff. And these are sort of lingering. It's so funny how in football, new appointments are often a reaction to things that have gone wrong in the past. Because as much as Guardiola was fantastic for them, there was a lot of friction there between him and some of the staff at the club already, most famously the doctor. And moving forward, you wonder if it's partially with that in mind that they don't want someone to bring in a whole sort of posse of their own guys. Of course, there was the ill-fated Ancelotti spell afterwards, which also emphasised the whole communication issue. So you can see that from that point of view, Pochettino coming in with his crew, because he's very close with his assistants. He's one of those coaches who pretty consistently talks about things that we have achieved when he says, and he doesn't necessarily always mean the team, he means the whole coaching staff. I'd be very, very surprised if he didn't bring his guys with him. And that for a long time was very much something that Bayern didn't want. But of course, with Hoeneß moving on, it's a little bit harder to say what Bayern wants and what they don't want, because it's a completely different situation.
Yeah, it is.
What's the most likely outcome, do you think, in this?
I think that the leading contenders are Bayern and Juventus.
Juventus, huh?
Yeah.
At the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't think Pochettino's going anywhere in the next month or two. And so, if as you were suggesting, if you're Ed Woodward and you think, this is the guy for us, I think do it now, someone else will get him.
There's absolutely no downside to Ed Woodward and Manchester United getting Pochettino. Like, and there's several reasons for it.
Hey,
is the downside? We haven't prepared upstairs correctly, and therefore Pochettino will arrive, get frustrated, and be out the door pretty quickly.
Sure, but
that would be my thinking.
Fine, but that's not
that was half the problem at Tottenham, wasn't it?
Sure, but
there's no barrier between Levy and Pochettino. There's no football expertise between the two.
I mean, you say the barrier. I mean, he was there for 5.5 years and he revolutionised the whole club on his own. So it wasn't like he couldn't do the job.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you look at where it started to go wrong, certainly in terms of them not getting the right transfers in, which ended up with the situation that they're in.
Yeah, that's possibly fair.
Post Paul Mitchell, which is, what, 18 months?
But my point reunited, and we'll hear from the Norwegian embassy in just a minute. But my point reunited is, if you are Ed Woodward, you are a vastly unpopular person at one of the largest clubs in the world, right? Go and get Pochettino, who's a better manager than Solskjaer. You then get a lot of brownie points with the fans. Okay, and the argument about the lack of sporting director, which I understand and accept, they clearly have a blind spot or a reason for not getting a sporting director. And if that's the case, and then you accept that as the case, you then just end up saying, well, in which case, at least go and get the best coach you can. Yeah, at least go and do that, because Solskjaer isn't anywhere near even in the top 5 or 10 candidates that United could get. So it's a win, and they can also easily afford him, despite obviously because he's on a free, but they can afford him anyway.
I suppose if we flip it back to Bayern, you could argue that they're entering a period of flux upstairs as well, which is very unusual for them. We've got a date for Rummenigge going as well. Oliver Kahn's gonna come in, so it'll be very interesting to see how that rolls out.
I mean, the counterpoint to the whole United thing is that why would Poch go there? Like, if he can wait and there's a possibility of a job opening up for him at Bayern, opening up for him as PSG,
that's fair.
Maybe even Real Madrid.
That's fair.
If he's a guy who's everyone in the known universe agree that he's done a good job at Tottenham, but you can bring up the trophies argument against them.
But if I'm a PR guy, I think I can PR you. Pochettino not being great at United, I can PR that. I think anyone can.
Yeah, that's not really what the listeners want to know. What the listeners want to know, Luke, is if you're Florentino, do you push Zidane out the nest?
Yeah, I think you would. I think I would. Yeah, I would. Yeah, if I was Florentino Perez, I would reign in an extended terror way that you would never have seen before. I would take all the dark parts of Florentino Perez, turn them up to 11.
Maybe we should keep this for Discord.
There is a real appeal at the Real Madrid thing as well with Pochettino, is that his track record of working with young players must excite them, because it's actually Real Madrid are a club that are heading into a generational change now.
True.
And actually they're halfway through one. And if you look at some of the younger players in their squad, it's really exciting. Like, you've got a lot of young guys who are there. You're just seeing Fede Valverde now playing a lot and looking brilliant. And also the guys...
It changes the way they play.
Also guys are out and down, like Martin Ødegaard growing up at Sociedad, and the prospect of him actually playing regularly for Madrid, not looking silly at all. The Hakimi's out of Dortmund, who's going to be a fantastic player for them at some point. There's a lot of interesting young players there, and it's very sort of not quite the way Madrid tend to work. Mm. But if you're in charge of that club and you look at what do we have that we can build on, they have a lot of interesting youth, and put a guy like Pochettino in charge of them, that's a very, very exciting thing.
Well, they'll give him 6 months to put some focus on it, won't they?
Yes. He won't be short of offers. He will not be short of offers. Let's follow up on Ronaldo then, because we mentioned him last week on the show, and he's since played internationally for Portugal. He's got Schrodinger's knee, as we've already mentioned.
Scored some goals against Lithuania.
He did, which I think was probably his main focus over the last week or so, shall we say.
I think
which
it's
is weird.
I think it's essentially like the legendary Lisbon restaurant, or Painel de Alcântara.
Tell us more.
That if you've eaten already... And your mate goes, as has happened to me before, after you've worked at Benfica or Sporting, do you want to come out? We'll go to Orpinel. And you're like, oh, I've eaten already, but it's really good.
What's good there?
Is that the steak?
Well, they call them Prego. Prego steak.
Oh, yeah. That's like a little steak sandwich. I'm talking a proper big size of my head, seeing purple spots kind of steak. But I guess... That's where Ronaldo was before this international break. You know you shouldn't go, but yeah, you know Lithuania are on the menu.
Yeah. If I was the head of physiotherapy at Juventus, I for one would be very, very happy with Cristiano Ronaldo going and playing on that pitch for Portugal. But he made some interesting comments, I think, after the Luxembourg game.
Yeah, he did. And he looked quite emotional.
Another really tough encounter that Portugal absolutely needed him for.
Yeah. Vital qualifier.
But they did. They had to win both of those games, or they would have ended up in the playoffs.
I think they would have ghosted through without Ronaldo against Luxembourg. And I think you think the same thing too.
You might think that. I'm not sure that he thinks that.
If he does, isn't that a significant diss to his teammates?
Well, that'd be unlike him, wouldn't it?
Can one of you pray see his comments after the Luxembourg game, and then just give us a little bit of a flavour of what the immediate future holds for Cristiano?
Yes, he was, as Lars would put it, totes emosh in the corridors of...
So emotional he threw a reporter's microphone into a river, or not? Not quite that level.
Well, he could have thrown it into a puddle of mud, because there were plenty hanging about.
Yeah.
I mean, the pitch was dreadful.
It was a potato patch, let's be fair.
Much worse.
Yeah.
It was, it was the sort of pitch that parents listening to this across the UK would think, Yeah, if we turned up and saw that pitch, our Saturday morning match would be called off.
I mean, that's the thing is...
Like for a massive European championship.
If I'm Maurizio Sarri and I've worked 40 years of a coaching career, all culminating up to managing at Juventus, and I saw that pitch after Ronaldo had said, or it had been commented on, that he wasn't fully fit to play because of his knee, and I saw him about to play on that pitch, that's a resigning issue for me. Well, he's making me look like an absolute mug.
Well, no, I don't think he does, because James talked about this last week, about how Sarri was vindicated by the fact that he'd replaced Ronaldo with Paulo Dybala as substitute.
Yeah, but that's not a Ronaldo point.
Wait for it. And then he'd gone on and scored. And the fact that Ronaldo, we'd said Portugal had said in the lead up to Lithuania and Luxembourg, Fernando Santos had said, oh, he's fine. He's fine. He's 100%. Well, this was the payoff for Juventus and Sarri. Okay, they'll be pissed off about him playing on that pitch, but the fact is he has come through unscathed, perhaps started to regenerate himself a little bit. Certainly,
I bet he says he can't play against Atalanta.
At the weekend, well, it'll be interesting to see. Yeah. You'd be annoyed if he didn't, because it's totally vindicated Sarri, because he came out and said afterwards in his comments, Ronaldo, he said, yeah, I've been playing with an injury. I haven't been good enough, and that's why they've brought me off. And they're quite right to take me off. Because yeah. I haven't been good enough.
And then the thing is, though, Lars, before I bring you in, what we have to understand is that Ronaldo was absolutely wrong. I'm sure we can all agree, for unveiling that flag that said Portugal, Instagram, Juventus, in that order.
It's more a pocket square. I
mean, all right. What do you want from me? Listen,
can you explain the comments he made? Because no one, people might not know what they are.
You know what?
Well, I was saying, he said, "I have been injured. Juventus were right. I've been playing through this injury through Juventus and Portugal.
Fine.
I've been trying to do my best.
Fine. Sorry, love. Yeah. Please come on.
And this is the thing, right? I wonder. You're saying it'd be very bad for Sarri if he got it. You know, I think it might actually be not a bad thing for both Sarri and for Cristiano Ronaldo if he'd twisted an ankle on the pitch and been out for a couple of weeks and maybe even a month or two. Because actually, maybe he needs a rest. Like, the guy's not young. Maybe him, and he's not...
And you think he needs to be forced to have a rest?
Yeah, because you can't bench him. Like, you can't say to Ronaldo, you're not playing for the next five games for your own good. Like, that would cause a bit of a tent fire, so to speak. So it's not what you want. But he has, I mean, he's got like one goal from open play in the last seven for Juventus.
James,
I mean,
says he's not just simply not been very good.
No, he hasn't. And they're paying him... Sorry to bring up money again, but when you're paying a guy that much, like it's almost like three times as much as the second best player.
I think it's 30 million euros a year, yeah.
You need to be getting more than that for that investment. You've set up the whole team around him.
And you've actually got your Arsene Wenger abacus out today, haven't you, Lars?
And actually the fact that Juventus have kind of looked a little bit better and a little bit more fluid in the situation when he's gone off, maybe actually him being away for a bit so that Sarri can keep working on his team and, you know, bringing the Sarrismo to the fore and all this, and then you have him back for the latter part of the season, maybe that would actually be the best thing for all people concerned. But of course, that's not what happened. I'm just saying that, you know, maybe that would have been.
It sounds to me like a lot hinges on what happens against Atalanta, and we'll come on to that a bit later on. Lars,
no game of the week spoilers on here.
No, sorry. Well, if I remember to do games of the fucking week, I keep forgetting to do it.
The swearing.
Lars, when I asked you what you wanted to talk about this week, stop it. Before you were 4 minutes late for the record because you misplaced your house keys,
yep.
You said you wanted to talk about Zlatan. Now, you said to me that he's been sort of touted around various clubs in Italy, but I read this morning that he's been offered 6 million euros for 18 months at Milan.
Yeah, that would seem to have some legs. The link to Milan, they're in a quite desperate situation in terms of their hopes of getting a European qualification this season, because they've been very bad.
When was the last time Italian football saw a player in that slow?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. So everyone, there's been a lot of excitement. You know, Ibra, he's going to come back. He's going to come and conquer everyone. Like, have any of you guys watched him in MLS while he's been over there? Like, proper sort of Andy Carroll levels of slow now. And the thing about him is...
How did he manage to get so many goals then?
Yeah, this is what I'm getting onto. He's still, like, in terms of strength, he's still a remarkable specimen. And he's still very agile for a man his age. He's pulled off some volleys and some finishes and some stuff that you look at him and you might... You're what?
Yeah.
He can still do that. And he's still enormously strong. So in MLS, you just get him in the box and whack the ball towards him. And if the ball gets in any sort of where near him, he could probably get it into the goal somehow. I just wonder if... if he can make an impact at the level that you'll be asking. And this is the thing. I can completely see him play a sort of Fernando Llorente at Spurs type role where he's like the mighty oak who you put in the box to change up the game a little bit, to give you an aerial option. I think he could be super dangerous as that. But you're looking at, can you have Ibra at the club without him playing every single minute he's fit and without him becoming the focal point and everything?
Needs a strong coach. You think the coach is strong enough?
Like, this is Pioli telling Ibra when to play and when not to play. That's a lovely image. This is the thing. So, whereas at the age he is, can he play every single minute? Is he psychologically and mentally a kind of, this means the same thing, the kind of guy who's happy playing a bit part role? I'm not sure. So it's a very odd thing.
I suppose the thing I would ask, though, Lars, and I don't want to get horribly carried away with it, but I think a level of getting carried away with it is inevitable. You look at what's happened, especially with forwards in Serie A over recent years. You look at Toni, you look at Quagliarella, you look at Di Natale. Is this the latest 30-something Capo Cagnolo?
We would love to see it.
Almost 40-something at the end of that contract he's being offered.
We'd love to see it. He's kept himself in good shape.
It would be very interesting. I've been quite dismissive of it, but it would be fascinating to see it. I just think it's odd for a club of Milan's stature to really hang their hat on that as a plan.
But I would say... What is their stature, I would say?
Well, Andy, is it too harsh to say it's a measure of the position they find themselves
no,
in?
No, I don't think it is too harsh to say that at all. I mean... I've thought from the days of Inter, really, when, of course, he was outstanding. The thing with Zlatan is he does circumvent the need to play good football. Milan don't play good football anyway. So what exactly would he be breaking up?
And what you can say, under Elliott's management, Milan have had a very clear sort of, you're ever going to sign young guys with big potential upsides and increase the value of the brand and this sort of thing. And I guess if you look at this Milan squad right now, maybe what you're short on is proven quality, basically, people who have shown they can perform at a very high level. And there are benefits to having Zlatan in terms of...
In the 90s.
Yeah. Almost literally in the 90s. Yeah. There are benefits to having him, though, in the sense that I think he can help with the sort of training ground atmosphere. He's a guy who demands a lot of himself and a lot of all other people around him.
Yeah.
And you won't have people slacking off in training. He'll kick them in the head and all this sort of stuff. So I think there are benefits to having Zlatan at the club. The thing I would question is, aside from the mobility issue, the fact of whether he can play every single minute of every single game and whether he, as a personality, can be a positive and productive member of a group if he isn't the focal point of it. I'm not sure about that.
All right, games of the week. I've remembered it this week. Thank you for the reminder, Andy. I had written it down in the right part of my running order anyway, but I do appreciate you giving me a nudge.
You need to tattoo it on your arm like Guy Pearce.
I do, in Memento, yeah. I'm going to go Atalanta v Juventus to start off, purely because there's so many different...
Yes.
Sort of subplots to this game. We've got the thing we talked about with Ronaldo and Sarri and how that's going to manifest itself. But chiefly, I think, I don't want to get too kind of high-minded about it. Chiefly, it just looks like a great game. It's in Atalanta. Atalanta are brilliant at home. They're a free-scoring team, but they also concede a fair bit when compared to their fellow top six sides. And James Horncastle of this parish says that he thinks Atalanta can last the distance in Serie A this season and qualify for the Champions League again. They've been for a bit of a wobble themselves. They haven't won in three or four. So it'll be a big test both of Sarri but of Atalanta's credentials as well. That's on Saturday at 2:00, so it kicks off Serie A's round of fixtures.
Yeah, just to add some numbers to your very well-reasoned arguments. I mean, they've scored 30 goals in 12 games so far this season.
It's so good to watch.
Whilst also conceded 18 so far, as they conceded as many goals as Spal. But I mean, they keep banging them in. So yeah, always watch Atalanta, I think, is a good...
It's a great maxim. Who have you gone for, Lars?
It's Real. It's Madrid taking on Real Sociedad, and it's the Martin Odegaard derby, as we all know. Martin Odegaard gave what I believe is his first big Spanish radio interview in Spanish this week.
Right.
Note to Gareth, it can be done. And he spoke about that he won't celebrate if he scores out of respect, and he wants Madrid to win the league. He was saying all the right things. He's a very clean boy, Martin Odegaard.
I'd rub it right down their throat if I scored against him.
Well, because the thing is, though, it's meant to be a 2-year loan deal.
Yeah.
And there's increasing speculation that they're going to take him back at the end of this season.
Yeah. And when
so he doesn't want to upset them.
Yeah. One asked about, well, he did say the plan. He did say, you never know in football, as you can say about these things. Yeah.
A weird experience for the young.
What's he going to have on his Norway flag?
Yeah, exactly. The win experience for the young, well, presumably probably Duplo, Paw Patrol, Real Madrid.
Please have me back.
He's not that young anymore.
I know he's not. But it's going to be a weird experience for him because he may not be that young anymore, but he is a fairly inexperienced player still. And he's going back to the Bernabeu in circumstances that not many other players would have experienced. So it'll be a difficult one for him to manage. That's on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. It's well worth a watch. Real Madrid versus Real Sociedad. Andy Brassel, last but not least.
Milan versus Napoli.
Nice. You've gone for that in the end. You said you weren't going to do that one.
Yeah, well, I had that even before we started getting carried away about Zlatan doing his Carmelo Anthony thing in San Siro. Well,
we all know he's going to Leeds anyway, but carry on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that I would love to see.
Yeah.
But I think you've got two coaches here in Stefano Pioli and Carlo Ancelotti who have got a lot riding on this, actually. Normally, you'd look at Milan-Napoli and you think it's an attractive fixture anyway. But both clubs are not in a great place. You think that apart from when they went away at Lecce, Napoli have not won away in Serie A since the opening game of the season. They've got all these attacking players that Ancelotti is struggling to get into what's a genuine form. And then you look at the fact that there's still this dispute that's still rumbling on in the local media in Naples between the club and the players. I think Napoli really need to win this. And I think Milan have got an opportunity. Pioli has got an opportunity to take some of the pressure off him because they could do with a win. They could do with a performance and some points against someone who's not totally rubbish. And they were really good, actually, against Juventus last time out. As James was saying last week, they always play well at Juventus and lose, and they followed that template. But until Dybala replaced Ronaldo, it wasn't happening. They could have easily got something from that. So I'm interested to see if Napoli, before they've got a big Champions League game in the coming week, of course, where they'll try and seal qualification, that they really need to... I really need to get some points at San Siro.
Well, that's Saturday tea time. So actually, you can do a 1-2-3 of all our selections. You can do Atalanta v Juve, then you can do Milan against Napoli, and then you can do Real Madrid versus Real Sociedad.
Cancel everything that's happening Saturday, basically. Yeah.
And then Sunday, awesome. you can get move on with your life.
Yeah.
Great. Cheers, guys. Guys, listeners, don't forget to check out the preview show tomorrow. That'll be out first thing Friday morning. There's another Greatest Games on Saturday. And do subscribe to Football Round with Daddy to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you want to be a real good egg, go to Patreon and support us on there. It's patreon.com/footballramble daily for all sorts of extra bits and pieces. Thank you, Lars. Thank you, Andy. We out. We'll see you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
you've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.